Hi everyone, I'm Mickey Hazard and you're listening to the Hot Spurs Podcast.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm, beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day you were born. Straightening the curve, yeah, flattening the hill. Someday the mountain might get him, but the law never will. Making their way, the only way they know how.
Yeah, welcome to the Hot Spurs Podcast. It is Tuesday, the 27th of November 2012, and we've got an extra special guest. We've got Mickey Hazard tonight. How are you doing, Mickey?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, thank you, Steve. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Unfortunately, we haven't got Colin. We've got connection issues. I don't know if it's to do with the weather or what have you, but it's a bit of a shame because Colin was dying to speak to you, and he had a load of questions again, and what have you. But, yeah, no, it's great to have you on. I mean, we're a football podcast. We get straight into the football, and obviously we play West Ham at the weekend. How do you think we got on there, Mickey?
Well, I thought that it was odd because on the Thursday night I was training an under-16 schoolboy team and there was a few West Ham supporters, and like the mugs they were, they bet me that West Ham would win, and even predicted the score as well. So obviously I won the bet comfortably. I thought we were far, far too good for them. I thought that you could see that they were a side that had came up. We were a side that were challenging for Europe. You know, we were that far ahead of them. And really the goal line didn't do the dominance of us sort of justice, really.
Yeah. Did you go to the game, or did you sort of see it on Match of the Day? Or
no, I've seen it two or three times since. I've watched it on Match of the Day. I've watched it. I actually watched a little bit of it today as well. I think it was today or yesterday. It was a repeat on as well. So I watched it a few times, and the gulf in class was evident for all to see. Really, yeah. They've got off with a 3-1 beating, which really was a 5 or 6 nil. 18, you know, so but a good performance. I felt like we were so inside that you know, three league defeats on spin was a bit of a knockback after the fantastic result at Old Trafford, and a bit of a shock as well to the system, because but we have had a few injuries. You know, Dembele was a big loss to us, so you can't win all of the time, unfortunately. And when you've got injuries to your best players, sometimes it takes its toll on the team. Even though you've got good players coming in, they're not quite used to, or not quite the quality of the players that are out, and they're not quite used to playing at the highest level, you know, on a regular basis. So you always lose something. But yeah, we're back on track.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, I was watching the game and I thought, you know, this has been coming. We've been unlucky here, been unlucky here. On this show, we always talk about the luck and what have you, and when it's not going our way. And I was watching that game and I was just saying, you know, we've got to have a bit of luck somehow at some point. And what actually happened? It wasn't luck. It was a brilliant bit of skill, wasn't it, Defoe? I mean, what a brilliant goal.
I mean, it must rank as one of the goals of the season. I mean, in the first place, the skill out on the touchline where he went between the two players was fantastic. To then have, I suppose, the single-mindedness and the skill to then take it a stage further and cut out the defence and then cut outside and then bash it in the back of the net for nowhere, really. West Ham was not obsessed any danger at the stage he picked the ball up. No, absolute wonder goal from, you know, being a contender for goal of the season. And it's, for me, you're right, it has been coming. We're capable, you know. When you talk about luck, I prefer not to mention luck, because I think that at times we've maybe not made our own luck, you know. Like against Chelsea, for instance, we defend deep in the first half, we're 1-0 down at half time, we come out second half, we press higher up the pitch, we put them under pressure at the back, we get 2-1 in front. And then we make a negative substitution, whereby we take off an attacker to bring on a midfielder, to defensive midfielder, and suddenly we're on the back foot and we lose 4-2, you know. So I'm not sure that's luck. I think that's more about, you know, recognise what you've done well, why you've got in the position you've got in that position, and keep doing it.
Yeah. So when you were playing then, so what would happen? So you'd be 2-1 up. Say you're 2-1 up against Chelsea, or I mean, Chelsea wasn't such a big side, obviously, when back in the mid-80s and that. But,
yeah.
2-1 up, say you're Liverpool, because you beat Liverpool and you scored, or was it Man United, you scored the winner, right?
Yeah, I scored the winner.
So was that towards the end of the game, or were you 1-0 up from early on?
No, 1-0 up from the 7th minute it was.
Right, so you got 25 minutes left. What happened, you know?
No, 7th minute. We had 83 minutes left.
Oh, 7 minutes to the end. Sorry. So you're playing that game, right? And then you've got 25 minutes left, okay? And
yeah.
didn't the manager sort of try and shore it up and put a defensive person on, or did he just keep going?
No, not at all. I mean, listen, when you've got Ben Odolodjadila and Rudy Miller, Steve Archibald, golf course, you don't take them off the managers.
No.
And, you know, you're going to get more goals, if anything. So you don't take them off and put on a defensive midfielder, because you know that. If it goes against you and you can see the goal, then what you've done is you've taken off a potential match winner.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at Old Trafford, anyone can score a goal, just as Chelsea can at White Hart Lane. So when you take off an attacking player, obviously then limit your options when you're going forward. So and that's exactly what happened in that game. You know, I never knew Keith Bergenshaw make a negative decision.
Yeah.
Every decision that he made was generally positive, and even if it was yourself being taken off, you knew that he was doing it for an attacking reason rather than let's defend what we've got. And Spurs, you know, when you look at their team today, you know, it's an exciting attacking team. You know, when they're in full flow, they excite. They sort of get you off on the edge of your seat. They bring you alive with excitement and anticipation and. When we're sitting back defending, we don't carry the same excitement, the same anticipation. So why do we drop back and defend deep when we've got this wonderful flowing attacking game when we're going forward? We've got very attack-minded players. We do it with such pace and such creativity that to suddenly become defensive is going against everything that this team is about.
Yeah, and our defensive players aren't, you know, quite good enough at the moment, are they? I mean, if you're talking about bringing off one of the creative midfielders and sticking Livermore on, you know, it's the opposition are rubbing their hands together, aren't they?
I don't
want to be too cruel on him, but...
No, I mean, I love Jake. I coached Jake for 4 years when he worked in the Spurs Academy, and I love him as a boy. I loved him as a player, and I always felt he was one that was going to make it at Spurs because of his sheer desire and determination. And I actually think he's did very well when he has played as well. But having said that, and you're talking about the defence, I hope that our defence, I don't think it's that we're not good enough. I think it's that we've had injuries, we've obviously literally retiring, we've had new players coming in that have got to adapt to one another, and they've not quite found the perfect balance yet. So we look a bit vulnerable at times to conceding goals. But then it's always been my motto and the Spurs' motto that the best form of defence is attack. And that's what we do best. And when you're on the attack, you know, you don't have to defend. So although you have to be aware defensively, you know, your main priority is to get people into position to score goals. That's what I say is that, you know, to dare is to do. Let's go forward and let's turn 1-0 into 2-0 and 2-0 into 3-0, and then we put the game beyond doubt.
And so Jake's going to make it, yeah?
Well, I think he's a very, very good player. I think he's got a lot of competition at Spurs. Will he make it into the Spurs first team on a regular basis? I think as he grows and matures, maybe he will. I think the competition at the minute is pretty good. Dembele and Sandro have formed a fantastic partnership. We've got Scotty Parker coming back. So it's going to be tough for Jake, but I'll tell you what, this kid don't go away.
Yeah.
You know, he's ready to to fight for his place at all opportunities. So
I must say, I've said this before, but if you look at Jake Livermore, I mean, he looks like such a good football player, doesn't he? If you could design a football player, I mean, he's got the stature, he's got that you know, tiger in his eye.
And he's a fantastic athlete. And as I said, when I had Jake for about 3 or 4 years, and I played him at right fullback, and he was absolutely outstanding, you know. Yeah. So I think that there's many strings to Jake's bow, and he might not make it as a centre midfielder. He might end up becoming a right fullback, you know. But there's many strings to his bow, and I will write Jake off, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, that's great to hear, you know. And as these guys get more confidence and more experience, you know, they do push on. You know, a lot. I was chatting to Colin just before I spoke to you, and I was gonna ask you about your second spell at Spurs, because I missed the first spell. I mean, I'm 36, but you'd gone to Chelsea when I first started going to Spurs, but I caught you on your second spell, and I have to say that when you came back, you know, initially it was sort of, you know, you came back at about 31 or 32, didn't you?
33,
right. So you came back, and we're, you know, a lot of fans will say, yeah, well, he's past it now. He, you know, he's too old and what have you. And I remember watching you, and I just thought, you know, you were so composed on the ball and so comfortable with it and stroking it about. And you had a great second spell at Spurs, didn't you?
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a bit blighted by, you know, things were going great. And then I had an incredibly poor tackle on me. I ended up having a cartilage operation, and then at the end of the season, an Achilles tendon operation, which took a long time at the start of the following season to recover from. And spent a lot of the time recovering, and then Ozzy sort of left, Jerry came in, and sort of almost the day Jerry came in, I tore my hamstring. He'd sort of give us that famous Tuesday running session.
Yeah.
I was 34 and a half at this stage, and I was playing in the reserves the next day. Jerry gave us this Tuesday, the dreaded running session, and I ended up having to do it and play the game the next day. And in the 60th, 70th minute, I tore my hamstring. So I spent the first 6 or 7 weeks of Jerry's reign on the bench, you know. So I didn't get off to the best start with the Jerry, and then it sort of fell away from there. I come back and got another injury. So I still maintain, and I spoke to Jerry on a number of occasions about that, I don't think age comes into the equation if you stay fit.
Yeah.
I think once you get injuries, it becomes a tougher struggle to get over them. At that age, you know, and Tilly was lucky enough to stay fit for quite a long while and never got a serious injury.
Yeah.
Whereas at 35, I got serious Achilles tendon injuries, and then I never really recovered from that. But when I first came back, the first 6 months went fantastic. I remember some of the games. I mean, I got goal of the month in one of the games at Upton Park against West Ham.
Yeah.
I think we had about 35 passes, and I was involved in the move 3 or 4 times and then smacked one into the top.
I remember, yeah. And wasn't there the Liverpool game, a brilliant 3-3?
Yeah, 3-3 at White Hart Lane.
Darren Caskey scored, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I scored a penalty that day.
Yeah.
We were 1-0 up at half-time. 10 minutes into the second half, we were 3-1 down. And I was running the game, strangely enough, and couldn't believe we were 3-1 down. And then suddenly got a penalty, and I stuck the penalty. I think it was me at 3-2.
Yeah.
And then Caskey equalised. You know, we got Kersley in the right flat. It's amazing how you remember every cross and every pass and every goal. You know, I've been retired how long? That was like 15, 16, 17 years ago, and yet it feels like it was yesterday. I can remember Kersley crossing from the right and Darren Caskey coming on and scoring, equalising, celebrations. And we nearly nicked it in the last minute, believe it or not, to win 4-3.
I do remember. And Hansen, Alan Hansen won't admit to this now, but I do remember watching Match of the Day that night, and he said, "I've never, ever clapped or cheered an away goal against Liverpool, but I must say, when Caskey put that in, I actually applaud. I found myself applauding because it was such a great game and so well deserved."
Oh, it was an absolute. I remember the game. As I said, I was interviewed on the TV after the game, along with, I think it was Jamie Redknapp or Robbie Fowler, one of the two, or even both. And it was an absolutely unbelievable game to play in. I remember when we got the penalty, it was a gale force windy and raining, and Grobo was giving it all the, you know, the shake on the line and everything. Yeah. And I normally hit it to the other corner, but because the wind was blowing sort of right to left, I thought I'd leave it to the right-hand corner. I normally leave it to the left corner, but I thought I'd leave it to the right, and then it won't get blown outside the post. And of course, Groveler went to the left, and it went into the right. So it was an absolutely amazing, amazing, amazing game. And I remember reading all the papers on the Monday and the Sunday, and the praise that they gave us for that game. It was, it really was a special game.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I bumped into Kenny Dalglish once, and I asked him... what's the most, you know, important goal you ever scored, or what was the most nerve-wracking? I think it was a combination. And he said he took a penalty for Celtic against Rangers and they won 1-0, but he said he's never felt more nervous. What was it like taking a penalty?
To be honest with you, that particular day I was actually playing very, very, very well, so my confidence was sky high. And I think that if you approach the penalty when you're at the top of your form, maybe there's an old surprise for you. I think that when you take a penalty in, and maybe you haven't had the best of games, I think that you're... I mean, missed the penalty myself. I hit the post. I remember on the run, I wasn't playing great.
Yeah.
And on the run-up, my legs were like jelly.
Oh, no.
It just turned to jelly, and I don't think you can train or be coached for that, because on that run-up to the penalty spot, you never know how you're going to feel.
Yeah.
The size of the situation can often dictate how you feel. When you're running up, your legs are like jelly, and they're almost given way. So when I see people slipping over at the point of impact, like Beckham did that day, behind the ground, might well have given way. But I'm certain that the nervousness of the situation, the jelly-like feeling you're having your legs, plays its part as well.
Yeah. Did you ever? You never took one against Arsenal?
No, I never took one against the Gooners. But I did score over at the Ivory in a 3-1 victory, and I made two goals in 1982 over at Ivory. It was like, you know, we know when you've come through the system at Spurs as I did, and you know the sort of rivalry between Arsenal and Spurs, when you play in your first derby as such, and you score and you make two goals and you win 3-1, the feeling is absolutely amazing, because you know that the next game that you go to White Hart Lane, because you did what you did against the Gooners, you're going to get an absolute standing ovation, you know. So I always used to love the excitement of doing something great, and then the reception you got from the fans, you know, because the fans, what you must remember about the fans is that the fans are everything. They are the football club itself.
Yeah.
Without the fans, there's no football club. So when you are cheered and revered by the fans, I don't think there's any higher accolade that you can get. People say the players' accolades are higher, but it's not, because when the fans recognise and love you and revere you and give you receptions of unbelievable ovations, I don't think there's an higher accolade that you can get as a player, because the fans are the club.
Well, there's a couple of things there. I mean, obviously, there's Danny Rose, who's going to be absolutely adored as a Spurs legend, whatever he does for the rest of his career, because of that goal he scored. I mean, that's one thing. But you was talking there about you know, yourself, and like I say, when you came back for the second time, I hadn't really seen you for the first time. And when you came back, you know, the rumblings were, you know, you played at Swindon, at Chelsea and Swindon and what have you. But you came back, and everyone was like, "No, you watch this guy." You know, my dad was like, "Just watch the guy, the way that he gets the ball." And what I was getting at was, when people like Jake Livermore and Tom Huddleston, really, you know, are they young? But and I'm going to talk about Tom a little bit here, because I still feel that he's you know, in the jigsaw of it all, he's not quite fitting in, but you know, if we give him a bit more time, do you think he, you know, as he matures, like in his brain almost, you know, he realizes, wait there, I have got so much skill in my boots that I need to be demanding that ball like you did, like you say there, a couple of games there, you controlled the game, you know, you demanded the ball, you were like, give it to me. You know, in your younger days, were you a bit more naive and, well, I don't know if I want it right now, but as you got older, as you got into your 30s, it was like, give me the ball, you know, I really want it, yeah. I know what I can do.
Well, I think that maybe when I was younger, you know, we had Glenn Lowe, we had Ole Ardiles, we had Ricky Villa. It was easy to find.
Oh, so you couldn't get the ball.
Yeah, so, you know, there was many players who wanted the ball anyway. So
yeah.
Maybe the ball had to be shared around a bit more. In my sort of latter stages when I came back, I felt like I was the kingpin. Yeah. I was the playmaker and I would get more of the ball than anyone. I think with Tom, I think that if I was Paul's coach, I think he's a wonderful passer of the ball. But I also think that if I was his coach, I would be working on his agility, his lateral movement, his sidewards movement, his quick feet, things like that. Because if he can learn to play in tighter areas, then I think he'd be twice the player. Because the one thing about Glenn and Ozzy and myself and Ricky, we could play in really tight areas, two or three men round of us, we could jingle our way out. With Tom, what I feel is that great passer, great touch, but he needs to find a game in the game, a part of the game that when the game's tight in and around him, he can still find space. With a little shimmy or a little drop of the shoulder here or a little trick there in a tight area to create himself 5 yards and then use his passing ability.
Yeah.
If I was his coach, that's what I'd be working on continuously every day.
Yeah, I agree, because we've seen glimpses of it. You know, we've seen glimpses of where he can sort of get the ball and glide away, like Modric obviously used to do. You know, but I've always said he doesn't do it enough. And one thing that particularly frustrates me is, you know, what is he, 6'4"? You know, he's a big old lump. At corners, I know he's not going to get up like and possibly win a header, but at least get yourself in there, get in the mixer. So at least the central defender goes, right, who's got the big guy? And then that releases the other good players in the air to do something. Whereas he does this thing where yeah, go on.
No, absolutely, Steve. Sometimes you're just a decoy. You know, you can just be in there and you're occupying their big players, which will maybe free up one of your other big players to maybe attack the ball and score a goal. So sometimes, Tom, I mean, I wouldn't say he's going to be the best header of the ball, but he's a big lad and he can act as a decoy to pull someone away from someone else. So I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, what I was going to ask... I've got a couple of questions written down here because some of the lads on Twitter have wanted me to ask you. In terms of, I mean, the back four, if we had everybody fit, and we can go through the team if you like as well. I mean, if we were going to name the team for tomorrow, if everyone was fit, if we were going to go through it, would you'd have Loris in goal or Friedel or?
I think that Loris is obviously a lot younger, and we're planning for the future. You know, Friedel, great as he's been, I feel like his reactions are slowing down a little.
Yeah.
And you know, how long can he play on for, and how long can we hold a top keeper like Loris while he's sitting in the reserves or sitting on the bench?
Yeah.
So for me, Loris, Kyle Walker at right full back, without a doubt. Well, I don't think he's having his best period of football at Spurs. I think that he's got fantastic pace, he's got a great attitude, he loves bombing forward, and every now and again he can pick a great free kick.
He scored a brilliant free kick last year, and plus he's such a young guy and he's got to make mistakes. I mean, you've got to make mistakes to learn, haven't you? So
absolutely. I think in the centre back area, I think we're reasonably well off, really. I think we've got Kabul when he's fit. I think he's an absolute must to be in the team.
Yeah. So your left back, your left back's Benny, right?
I like Benny, I've got to say. I think he's one of the most improved players at the club. When he first came, I thought he was vulnerable, prone to making a mistake and cost us a goal. And I think that he's improved drastically. I think that it depends where you play Vertonghen. If you play Vertonghen left back, then you'd leave Benny out.
Yeah.
But if you're putting Benny in, and what I like about Benny is he's naturally left-footed. You've got Gareth Bale ahead of him, naturally left-footed. They're both very quick.
Yeah.
And you've got Kyle Walker and Leonard down the right. So down both flanks, we've got phenomenal pace.
Yeah.
So I quite like that combination on both sides, two right footers of pace, two left foot of pace. Vertonghen, I think, is a clever footballer who reads the game very well, and possibly his own term will be a better centre back. But you've got Corker, Cabool, Dawson. I love Michael Dawson. I love the way he loves Spurs. You know, he had the opportunity to go in window, didn't leave. I love the way he loves Spurs. I think he shows great loyalty and commitment to our club.
Have you met Michael Dawson?
I've not been in his company as such, but I've met him and said hello to him.
He's a nice guy, isn't he?
Oh, he's one of every piece person that I speak to. He says he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
I would hate to see him leave. But to say, for me, you can within any club, you've got your mercenaries who come for the money and they do their part. But then, you know, for the heart and soul of the club comes from the players that love the club. It comes from the players that came through the ranks. What's great about Dawson is he didn't come through the ranks. He was bought in, but he's fell in love with the club. And so he gives us our heart and soul. You know, he's prepared to die for the club. And that's what you've got to have in a combination with this sort of mercenaries who are there for the money.
Yeah.
So I love Dawson, but I think we're very strong at centre-back. As I said, we've got maybe four or five. You've got Callas as well. We've got four or five players who can all come in and do the job. If you're saying the Pepperian, I think Cabool's an absolute must.
Yeah. If you're going to pick the two centre-backs, who are you going for? Cabool first choice, would you say?
Yeah, Cabool for sure.
And then
I'd have to say...
Cool, Dawson.
Corker at the minute is playing really well, but I quite like Vertonghen as well. So it would be one Vertonghen or Corker.
See, that's why Dawson might be sold, because he's like fifth choice. That's the
trouble.
Yeah,
no, I know. It's very difficult. But what Cabool and Corker and give you in a pace? You can't beat pace. And while I love Dawson and I love the fact he's a Spurs player, I also recognise that he's not as pacey as the others, and that's why I think he doesn't get selected.
Yeah.
But he wears a lot on his sleeve. He gives his everything to the club, and I worship him, mate. I love him.
Yeah.
And I would never want to sell him or see him move on.
You're right.
I think he's a super player.
And these days, long
may he stay expert.
Yeah, and these centre-backs, I mean, they just... No club at the moment are keeping two centre backs for any more than sort of 5 or 10 games. I mean, they're just getting injured all over the place, aren't they? So you need four really good centre backs at least, don't you?
Absolutely.
Man United have
surprising that the game.
Unbelievable.
Got to say, you know, I look in my day, for instance, and think the game itself in my day was a million times more physical than it is today. You know, players are so well protected today that it's surprising so many playing against so many injuries, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I look at Robbo, for instance, Graham Morris and Paul Millen. Wow, I mean, they flew into tackles like there was no tomorrow.
Yeah.
Challenged headers, you put their heads where other people wouldn't put their boots, you know, and yet didn't suffer many injuries. And then I look at today's players and they think they're getting injured right, left and centre. So there's something, maybe they're on such a, you know, with all the advancements in technology and science and nutrition, maybe they've reached a peak of fitness that actually makes them more vulnerable to injury as well.
Yes, it's an interesting point. I mean, I'm a dad and I'm also a teacher at school, and it's like the kids that are so protected by their mums are most likely to get hurt, whereas the kid who sort of gets in all sorts of scrapes, you know, seems to get off lightly because he knows how to fall and he knows. So
always the case, isn't it? You cause the trouble, you never get hurt, and the one who didn't cause it gets hurt.
Yeah.
Just
while we're talking about that, can you tell us who sort of the nastiest player you ever played against? Who was a bit, sort of treading on people's toes and stuff. Was there anyone in particular you can think of?
Well, I suppose, you know, I don't like saying, because I didn't like anything that he stood for. I will mention him, but I didn't like anything he stood for. I think that to play the game of football and play it by just sheer intimidation, Vinnie Jones, I thought, was nothing short of a joke. So I didn't like anything he stood for in terms of football.
Yeah.
You know, football's a beautiful game, and while it's a competitive game, you have to do whatever necessary to win. I think that it's important that you adhere to the rules and regulations too. And I didn't like anything he stood for in terms of the way, I had verbal disagreements with him on the pitch.
Yeah.
When he was sort of verbally with the players, I didn't like it one bit. But in terms of Green Sumas, was as hard as they come.
Yeah.
He was proper hard, never moaned if he picked him. Not that anyone kicked him, because they didn't fancy getting back what he gave.
Was you at the club when he was there?
Hey?
Was you at Spurs when Graham Souness was there? Because obviously he was a kid.
No,
he was just
prior to me.
Oh, okay.
He left, I think.
Because we missed out on a big one there, didn't we, with him?
Oh, we did, yeah. But then sometimes circumstances dictate reasons why, he left. He was very, very homesick.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily our fault. It was just that he got homesick and somehow never got through it. And ended up leaving, but what a player. I mean, he was fantastic footballer, and hard as nails.
Yeah.
So, often when you played Liverpool, even when you were dominating the game against them, you would always hear Souness saying, "Don't worry, boys, don't worry, we'll have our spell, don't worry, keep playing, it'll come,
Yeah.
So even when they were in a bad time, he was always there, sort of pulling them through it. Great captain.
Yeah, I've heard that they used to call him Charlie, like after Champagne Charlie, because he played hard and he.
Yeah, rumour has it.
Yeah.
Rumour has it. I haven't toured with him once or twice.
Yeah, no, good stuff. And so we're just going through the side there. So we've got Lennon on the right, Bale on the left. Sandro, first name for me in the centre mid.
Sandro Dembele.
And then would you go with Parker as well and one up front, or would you have the two guys up front and then that's your team? Or,
well, I think that the way Defoe has started off the season, I think it'd be very, very harsh not to have him in the team. I think you need the tall man, Adebayor. I think we need a target man who can hold it up and get movement off of him and around him. But I think it would be harsh if Jermaine was left out. So I think we'd have to go with the two up front. But
yeah.
The other option would be to put Scotty Parker alongside Sandro,
yeah,
and give Dembele a free roll.
Yeah, no, brilliant stuff. Just on Adebayor there, people are talking about, just going back to the Arsenal game and what have you. What hasn't been mentioned yet, I haven't heard anyone, is the last, saying he was pumped up and all this sort of stuff, and that's why he went out to that challenge. The last time he was pumped up, I wrote this down, was when he didn't like a team very much. He went and scored two goals. And if you can remember, it was against us when he was playing for Real Madrid. So, just goes to show that you don't have to go in two-footed or make these crazy tackles if you're pumped up. You can also play pretty well.
I think that when you're pumped up, I think it's vitally important that you channel it the right way. And the right way is to let your football do the talking.
Yeah.
The easy and stupid way is to steam into a challenge that is going to be questionable and maybe end up with a booking or a sending off, which it did, and ended up costing us the game. And he's got
to come back and show us what he can do, hasn't he, don't you think?
Absolutely, but it did just cost us the game. It cost us a lot of pride. It cost us everything, because I'm convinced we would have won that game. We were playing really well. And one side that you don't really want to play a man short against is Arsenal, the way they passed the ball.
Yeah.
I felt we were fully in control, and it was disappointing because, if you fired up channeling in the right way, you had the confidence of the goal. The best way to answer your critics over from there is to say, right, we've beat you 3-1, and I've got three goals.
Yeah.
There's no better way. So I'm not a big advocate of... I wouldn't call it revenge, but I wouldn't call... If you want to prove someone wrong, don't go out and fight and kick and tackle and chase. Go out and stuff it up them by showing them how good you are with the ball.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Great advice. I mean, just a couple of minutes left, if that's all right. I know you love talking about Spurs, but so do you get to go to many games or?
Well, I unfortunately for me, I get to one or two, and I also do lots of tours with the fans and what have you. Unfortunately for me, I coach on a Saturday and Sunday, and throughout the week as well, and.
Because we got a couple of people requesting that you come to the Bell and Hare next time you go to a game.
Yeah, no, I did see that on Twitter tonight that they want me to join the Bell and Hare club. Well, I tell them I have been in the Bell and Hare once or twice in my life, particularly when I was a player.
Yeah.
So yes, maybe one day I'll come down there and join in and have a bit of fun with you all.
Yeah.
Generally, I on the days that we're playing, and because I work in Kent, there's no hope that I'll ever get back in time for the game. So I tend to sort of have to watch it on TV. Sometimes I'll finish training and the game's kicked off, and I'll sit in down in Kent for the full 2 hours watching the game. and there's a long drive back, so it's quite difficult when you're a coach and you've got a sort of director of football at a small club in Kent, and we've got 35 teams.
Yeah.
And I have to sort of work my way through quite a lot of the team, so I'm often tied up when Spurs are playing, so I never get to see. I'll always catch it on TV, or I'm always on the. ESPN, the Score Centre. I think it might be ESPN, the Score Centre, and every time Spurs score, they kick my phone, so I know they've scored. So I'm never out of touch, and I always know the scoreline as and when it happens because it comes straight up on my phone. So, and if it clicks, it's quite funny, really, because as the phone clicks, I always think, "Oh, come on, please be Spurs."
Get the old
and there's nothing worse. as you're pressing the phone, you're putting in your cooler to get the scoreline. And then suddenly you say it's the opposition. We know what it's like to be a Spurs supporter. We never do things the easy way.
Yeah.
And they always leave us on the edge of our seats. And it's like a roller coaster ride where you're up 1 minute, you're down the next minute. But let me say this: would you change being a Spurs supporter? Because who would want to be on that dull, boring ride whereby you just stay on level ground the full season and you never had any highs and you never have any lows, you just don't even keel it all the way through. Not me, I love it when I'm on the big dipper at the top, and then I love the feeling as I'm shooting down.
Oh no, that's brilliant, Mickey. So, I mean, let's have a couple of predictions from you then. What do you reckon tomorrow night? We've got Liverpool. What do we reckon?
I think Spurs will win 3-1.
Okay, and then
Liverpool are a good side.
And then, what do we reckon final placement in the season? Come on, what do you reckon? Top four?
I think for definite top four. I think I don't think Arsenal will be there. I think they're struggling. I think that I don't think any team's sort of been outstanding yet. Manchester United, Manchester City are struggling a bit. Chelsea started off great. They've hit a down patch of changing manager. I think there's M3 and Spurs will be top four.
Fantastic. All right, Mickey. Thanks very much for being on the show. Come on, you Spurs.
Anytime, Steve. Come on, you Spurs. Come on.